Welcome to Zichru Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldhar, and today we're Masechta Shabbos, Daf Nun Beis. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, Rav holds that an excessive restraint is considered a burden and is therefore prohibited for an animal to be restrained with it on Shabbos due to the prohibition of Hotzah. Now this was challenged from a Braisa that stated that if the owner of a parduma tied a leash to it, the parduma is still valid. Now a leash is considered an excessive restraint for a parduma, and if an excessive restraint is considered a burden, then it should disqualify the paraduma, which is not permitted to carry burdens. Three Amoraim defended Rav that in this case, the extra restraint was necessary, and therefore it was not considered excessive to be classified as a burden. Abaya said that the Braisa was referring to a cow that was being transported to a different city, and therefore it required extra restraint so that it would not turn back. Rav explained that since a paraduma is so rare and priceless, it needs to be guarded with extra care. And Ravina said the Braisa was referring to a rebellious cow, which required extra restraint. Point number two, the Mishnah states that one may sprinkle the mechatas, the ash water, the paraduma, upon a collar of animals or immerse the collars in a mikveh even while it's on the animal's neck. Now this seems to contradict the Mishnah in Kalim that states that a ring of an animal is not capable of becoming tameh. So Rabbi Yitzchak answered that the collar was initially noi adam, a person's adornment, which was then transferred to become noi behema, an animal adornment. And Rashi explains that the ring became tameh while it was still a person's adornment. Rav Yosef explained that since a person pulls an animal with a collar, it's classified as a human kli, a human utensil, not an animal utensil. And point number three, a mishnah from Kalim was brought that all Kalim, all utensils become susceptible to contract tuma, to be makabel tuma through machshava, through thought, if the craftsman decides he'll use it without adding more to it. But they don't lose their capacity to be makabel tuma, unless there was a shinui maisa, a physical change. Rabbi Yudit said that when the Tana of the Mishnah said it loses its capacity to contract tuma through a maisa, an action, he was only referring to a maisa that brought about a destructive physical change. Okay, so let's review. Point number one, Rav holds that an excessive restraint is considered a burden and is therefore prohibited for an animal to be restrained with it on Shabbos due to the prohibition of Hotzah. So this is challenged from a braisa that states that if the owner of a parduma tied a leash to it, the paraduma is still valid. A leash is considered an excessive restraint for paraduma. And if an excessive restraint is considered a burden, then it should disqualify the paraduma, which is not permitted to carry burdens. So three Amoraim defended Rav that in this case, the extra restraint was necessary for the paraduma, and therefore it was not considered excessive to be classified as a burden. Abaya said the Braisa was referring to a cow that was being transported to a different city, and therefore required extra restraint so that it would not turn back. Rav explained that since a parduma is so rare and priceless, it needs to be guarded with extra care. And Ravina said that the Braisa was referring to a rebellious cow, which required extra restraint. And point number two, the Mishnah stated that one may sprinkle the mechatas of the parduma upon collars of animals or immerse the collars in a mikveh even while it's on the animal's neck. This seems to contradict the Mishnah in Kalim that states that a ring of an animal is not capable of becoming tameh. So Rabbi Yitzchak answered that the collar was initially a noi adam, a person's adornment, which was then transferred to become noi behema, an animal's adornment. And Rashi explains that the ring became tameh while it was still a person's adornment. Rav Yosef explained that since a person pulls an animal with the collar, it's classified as a human kli, a human utensil, not an animal kli. And point number three, a Mishnah from Kalim was brought that taught that all Kalim, all utensils become susceptible to be makabel tuma, to contract tuma through machshava, through thought, if the craftsman decides he'll use it without adding more to it. But they do not lose their capacity to be makabel tuma unless there was a shinui maisa, a physical change. And Rav Yehuda said in the Braisa that when the Tana of the Mishnah said it loses its capacity to contract tuma, to be makabel tuma through a maisa, through an action, he was only referring to a maisa that brought about a destructive physical change. All right, so now we go to our simon. So the simon for Nun Beis is a newbie to Yiddishkeit. So here goes. The newbie to Yiddishkeit was enjoying the how to transport a parduma on a leash video until the more esoteric parts about purifying animal collars and vessels losing their ability to become tameh through destructive physical changes. Once again in slow motion. The newbie to Yiddishkeit, newbie, that means we're on Daf Nun Beis. The newbie to Yiddishkeit was enjoying the How to Transport a Parduma on a Leash video, which reminds us, Rav holds, that an excessive restraint is considered a burden and is therefore prohibited for an animal to be restrained with it on Shabbos due to the prohibition of Hotzah. This was challenged from a braisa that stated that if an owner of a parduma tied a leash to it, the parduma is still valid. A leash is considered an excessive restraint for parduma. And if an excessive restraint is considered a burden, then it should disqualify the paraduma, which is not permitted to carry burdens. So 3 Amoraim defended Rav that in this case, the extra restraint was necessary, and therefore it was not considered excessive to be classified as a burden. Abaye said the Bryce was referring to a cow that was being transported to a different city, and therefore it required extra restraint, so it would not turn back. Rav explained that since a paraduma is so rare and priceless, it needs to be guarded with extra care. Ravina said the Bryce was referring to a rebellious cow, which required extra restraint. So the newbie to Yiddishkeit was enjoying the How to Transport a Paraduma on a Leash video, until the more esoteric parts about purifying animal colors, which reminds us the Mishnah state that one may sprinkle the mechatas, the ashwar of the paraduma, upon a collar of an animal, or immerse the collar in a mikvah while it's on the animal's neck. This seems to contradict the Mishnah in Kehilim that states that a ring of an animal is not capable of becoming tameh. So Rabbi Yitzhak answered that the collar was initially noi adam, a person's adornment, which was then transferred to become noi behema, an animal's adornment. Rashi explains that the ring became tameh while it was still a person's adornment. Rabbi Yosef explained that since a person pulls an animal with the collar, it's classified as a human utensil, not an animal utensil. So the newbie to Yiddishkeit was enjoying the How to Transport a Paraduma on a Leash video until the more esoteric parts about purifying animal collars and vessels losing their ability to become tameh through destructive physical changes, which reminds us the Mishnah from Kehilim was brought that taught that all kelim, all utensils, become susceptible to contract tumah through machshava, through thought, if the craftsman decides he will use it without adding more to it, but they do not lose their capacity to contract tumah unless there was a shinui maisa, a physical change. Rabbi Yehuda taught in a braisa that when the Tana of the Mishnah said it loses its capacity to contract tumah, to be mekabel tumah through a maisa, through an action, he was only referring to a maisa that brought about a destructive physical change. So once again, the newbie to Yiddishkeit was enjoying the How to Transport a Paraduma on a Leash video until the more esoteric parts about purifying animal collars and vessels losing their ability to become tameh through destructive physical changes. All right, now it's time for four blot back chazara. Dap Memches. So the sim from Memches is a brain moach, and we use brainiacs. So here goes. The brainiacs, that means we're on Dap Memches. The brainiacs were busy testing the expensive mochin fibers as insulation, which reminds us, Rabbi Bar Masna asked Abaye a question about mochin, expensive, unprocessed wool that's generally used to produce felt and is therefore considered muksa. He wants to know if mochin that were used to insulate food Erev Shabbos can be moved on Shabbos. In other words, does the fact that he's now using it for hatmana demonstrate that he's now permanently using it for hatmana and not for felt, and therefore it's no longer considered muksa? Abaye answered that just because the person didn't have a box of cheap straw handy for insulating does not mean that he's renouncing a valuable box of mochin. Therefore, the mochin still remains muksa. So the brainiacs were busy testing expensive mochin fibers as insulation and pillow stuffing, which reminds us, Rav Chista taught that one can return stuffing into a pillow on Shabbos. He did not consider this a violation of makabe patish. The Gemara asked from Rav Chista from a braisa that says it's prohibited to place stuffing into a pillow on Yontav, and even more so on Shabbos. The Gemara answered that Rav Chista was referring to returning stuffing to an old pillow, meaning a pillow that was already stuffed. This isn't considered fashioning a new pillow. The Bryce, on the other hand, was referring to new pillows, meaning placing stuffing in pillows that had never been stuffed, which is considered fashioning them into a pillow, which would be forbidden. So the brainiacs were busy testing the expensive mochin fibers as insulation and pillow stuffing. Proudly wearing their new white lab shirts with neck openings, were able to open up all on their own. Which reminds us, Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav. The one who opens up a neck opening on a garment for the first time on Shabbos is liable to bring a chatas because he violated the malach of makabe patish. Rav Kahana challenges from a braisa that permitted one to lop off the top of a sealed barrel with a sword in order to open up a barrel to use its contents. So Rabbi answered Rav Kahana, Zechibur vezeinechibur. The material of the shirt is bonded while the lid of the barrel is not considered bonded to the barrel. Rashi explains that although the lid of the barrel was cemented onto the barrel, it was done with the intention to eventually remove the lid. Therefore, it's not considered bonded, and cutting it open is not deemed creating a new vessel. As opposed to this, in the case of making a neck opening in a garment, the material is completely attached, and therefore, by making a neck opening, one would be liable for makabe patish. Daf mem tes. So the sim for mem tes is meat, and we use a butcher. So here goes. Winged doves flew over the holy butcher. Butcher, that means we're on daf mem tes. Winged doves flew over the holy butcher wearing tefillin, which reminds us, Rabbi Yannai said that tefillin required the one who wears it to have a guf naki, a clean body, like the standards of Elisha Baal Kanafaim, the winged one. He was called Elisha Baal Kanafaim because of the miracle that occurred when he was chased by a Roman officer during the times when one caught wearing tefillin would have his brain gouged out. Elisha took off his tefillin and covered them with his hands, and when asked what was in his hands, Elisha responded that he was holding dove wings. A miracle occurred and dove wings appeared. Elisha chose dove wings specifically because the Jewish people are likened to a dove in that just as dove wings protect the bird, the mitzvahs we perform protect us. So winged doves, who were the holy butcher wearing tefillin, who invited his customers to come sit down on his hides, which reminds us in the next Mishnah stated that one may insulate with animal hides, shlachin, on Erev Shabbos, and whether having insulated with them or not, one may move them on Shabbos. Rabbi Yonason ben Elazar said that it seems logical that the Mishnah is referring to the hides of a Baal Bais, literally a homeowner, one who has no plans to sell his hides, who doesn't care if they get dirty, and therefore they're considered fit for sitting on it, and they are not muksa. However, those belonging to an uman, literally a craftsman, one who plans on selling his hides, are muksa, since the craftsman plans on selling them, and therefore he does care about getting them dirty, and because of that, they're not considered fit for sitting on, and therefore they are muksa. Rabbi Chinin bar Chama said that Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, would say that his father was a professional tanner, and he would have his hides brought out to sit on. So we see from this that even a tanner, one who plans on selling his hides, is not particular about people sitting on his hides. So winged doves were the holy butcher wearing tefillin who invited his customers to come sit down on his hides so he could teach them about the 39 malachas. Which reminds us, the Gemara introduces a discussion regarding what the 39 malachas of Shabbos correspond to. Rabbi Chinin bar Chama said, the malachas are connected to avodas of Mishkan. They correspond to the labors needed to build the Mishkan. Rabbi Yonasan bar Rabbi Elazar said, they correspond to the 39 times the words malacha, Molachto and Molachas appear in the Torah. Daf Nun. So the sim for Daf Nun is a nincompoop, a silly foolish person. Here goes. The nincompoop. Nincompoop, that means we're on Daf Nun. The nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation, which reminds us, the Mishnah states that one may insulate with gizei tzemer, wood shearings, but they cannot be moved. Rashi explains that wool shearings are typically reserved to be made into thread, and therefore they're muksa. It was said in the name of Rebbe that the wool shearings are not permitted to be moved if they were not dedicated to being used for insulation. But if they were dedicated for use as insulation, they'd no longer be deemed muksa and one would be permitted to move them. So the nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation so high that he tripped over the hardened date palm branches, which reminds us, there's a three-way machlokas amoraim regarding one who harvested charayo shedekel, hardened date palm branches for firewood, which are muksa, and then changed his mind and decided to use them for sitting on, which is a non-muksa designation. So what's required to release the branches from their muksa status prior to Shabbos? Rav says, Koshi, must tie them into bundles. Intent alone is not enough. Shmuel says, Choshev, he must intend to sit upon them. He doesn't require physical action. And Rav Asi says, Yoshev, he sits on them Erev Shabbos, even though he doesn't tie them or consciously intend to sit on them on Shabbos. So the nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation so high that he tripped over the hardened date palm branches and fell into a batch of sweet-smelling barda, which reminds us, Amemar Mar Zutra and Ravashi were sitting together one Shabbos and were brought barda, a mixture containing one-third aloes, one-third myrtle, and one-third violets. Amemar and Ravashi washed with it, but Mar Zutra did not. Rav Mordechai explained that Mar Zutra holds that even during the week, one's not permitted to wash with it, since he agrees with what was taught in a brisa, that man may scrape crusts, a filth and crust of a wound, because of discomfort, but is forbidden to do so if it's to beautify himself. Rashi explains that he would be transgressing the prohibition of lo yulbash ish simlas isha, a man should not wear a feminine garment. A Maimon and Ravashi washed with it because they held what was taught in a brisa, that a person should wash his face, hands, and feet each day in honor of his creator. And Rashi explains the brisa means that it's an honor to one's creator due to the fact that a person was created in Hashem's image. Furthermore, one who sees beautiful creatures will come to bless Hashem. Daf Ninov. So the sim for Ninov is a gnawing beaver, which connects us to a beaver pelt hat. So that's our simon, a beaver pelt hat. The Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, that means we're on Daf Ninov. The Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo, insulating their cold food, which reminds us, when it was reported that Shmuel ruled that one may insulate something cold on Shabbos to keep it cold, Rav Yosef wanted to know why Shmuel needed to teach this when the Mishnah stated very clearly that it was permitted. So Abaye answered that without Shmuel, one might have thought that the Mishnah only permitted insulating cold water, which is not usually heated up through placing it under a pillow, and therefore there is no concern that one would heat up water in this fashion, thereby violating the prohibition of Hatmana. Food, however, which is normally covered by a pillow in order to warm up, would be prohibited to insulate to keep cold, lest one come to insulate it to warm up. So Shmuel's coming to teach that it's permitted to insulate even cold foods as well. So the Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo insulating their cold food and melting ice in their drinks, which reminds us, a brisa states that one may not crush snow or hail on Shabbos in order to make it into a liquid. It is permitted, however, to place him into a cup or bowl of liquid. Rashi explains that the Rabbanim forbade crushing the snow or hail into water because one is creating something new. It's nolad, and therefore it has the appearance of a malacha. However, placing them into a cup of wine, as an example, in order to cool the wine in the summer, or into a bowl, is not a problem, though, since the snow and hail melt on their own and not as a result of one's direct actions. So the Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo insulating their cold food and melting ice in their drinks, while their Arctic camels stood outside in their excessive restraints. Which reminds us, the first mission in the fifth parak states that it is permitted to let one's camel go out into Rosh Hashanah wearing a halter, an afsar, and a female dromedary wearing a nose ring, a chotem, and it's not considered that the animal is doing the malach of a hotzah. The reason for this is that since they both serve to restrain the animal, they're not considered a burden, they're not considered a masui, which would be prohibited to carry, but rather as clothes. Rebbe was asked what the case would be if the restraints were switched, meaning if a camel may wear a nose ring and a female dromedary may wear a halter. Rebbe responded that it's obvious that the female dromedary cannot go out with the halter, with the afsar, since it is a feistier animal, and the halter, the afsar, will not restrain it. Therefore, the halter would be considered a burden. Rebbe said the only question is regarding the nose ring, the chotem, for the camel, which is considered an excessive restraint for it. On the one hand, since it's an excessive restraint, it's not necessary, and therefore maybe it's considered a burden. Or perhaps we don't say an excessive restraint is considered a burden. And this discussion continues on Daphne and Base. All right, now it's time to conclude with our pop quiz of 10 questions, plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Here we go. Number 1. Which daf do you want about the importance of washing to give honor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That's on daf Nun. Good. Number 2. Where do we have the question whether according to Rabbi Shimon setting something aside makes a muksa? That's on daf Mem Hey. Good. Number 3. Where do we have the question whether a leash on a paraduma is an excessive restraint? That's on daf Nun Beis. Good. Number 4. Where do we learn the difference between olive and sesame gefes? That's on daf Mem Zayin. Good. Number 5. Where do we learn the difference between stuffing new versus old pillows? That's on daf Mem Ches. Great. Number 6. Where do we learn that one can insulate even cold foods? That's on daf Nun Olive. Good. Number 7. Where do we learn bad eating habits and their consequences? That's on daf Mem Olive. Good. Number 8. Where do we learn how to release hard branches, Charoi L'Shedekel, from their muksa status? That's on daf Nun. Good. Number 9. Where do we discuss using hides to sit on? That's on daf Mem Tes. Good. And number 10. Where do we learn that destructive changes to a kli removes its ability to be makabel tuma? That's on daf Nun Beis. Good. And now the 3 bonus questions from Brachas. Number 1. Where do we learn the bracha that said on ground flour? That's on daf Lamed Vav. Good. Number 2. Where do we learn that one should not be botzea? One should not break bread before everybody says Amen? That's on daf Mem Zayin. Great. And finally, number 3. Where do we have the question whether bal keri requires Mem Sa or Tisha Kabin? That's on daf Chav Beis. Good. Excellent. So that concludes our pop quiz and the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldfein Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.